Well, good evening, gentlemen. It's great to see you. Thanks for joining us here on a special edition of the Seder Stories podcast. My name is Jake Ruderman, current Holy Cross senior. I'm joined by my co-host. You want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Aiden Connell, the other co-chair of WCHC Sports.
So we are the current co-chairs of the Sports Broadcasting Club, as Aiden said, and we are so excited to get the opportunity to talk with you three Holy Cross broadcasting legends today. Thanks for making the time to be here. And do you just want to go down, maybe Craig, then Kyle, then Rob, and just introduce yourself, maybe even for fun, what your major was and year you graduated?
All right. Yeah, great to be here. I am Craig Lowell. I was the play-by-play on the old hockey and basketball broadcasts. I was a poli-sci major and I graduated in 06. So I'm coming up on my 20 year.
Yeah, let me do some quick math. So I'm Kyle McCarthy. I graduated in 2007, English and political science major. I called a lot of games with Craig and Rob over the years. Basketball, women's basketball, hockey, everything. So great to connect with everybody.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Macarella. Was a political science major. And started off doing football games and then broke into men's and women's basketball and men's hockey as well. And I also had a sports talk show on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. With one of my roommates, Pat Finn, who was at the station. And it was a mix of Holy Cross sports and pro sports, too.
Wow, you remember the time slot, too.
Yeah, I almost remember the phone number, but 508-793 is as far as I could get.
Awesome. That all sounds great. Well, thanks for that. And then, Craig, why don't you intro what the anniversary is that we're celebrating? You mentioned it's the 20th anniversary coming up of your graduating class. Why don't you explain to the audience what it is that we're here to talk about?
Yeah, sure. So what we're celebrating is what I consider still to be the greatest upset in college hockey history, when the Crusaders knocked off the Minnesota Golden Gophers in the first round of the NCAA tournament. It was a first round game. It was a 4 seed versus a 1. I believe we were the first 4 seed to ever defeat a 1 in the first round. And the best thing was that it took place in the North Dakota arena. So we had the entire arena on our side, rooting against their arch rivals.
That all sounds great, but you're being a little too humble. We're specifically here to talk about not only that upset, but the three of your infamous call of that upset that is, you know, reverberated through the internet in the years since.
Yeah, so it turns out that none of us were expecting to win along with everyone else. And we kind of lost our minds a little bit. It was an overtime victory. I think we kept our professionalism very high level throughout the entire game. We got comments from, you know, people that listened to the broadcast that were very appreciative that we were like critical of the Holy Cross team when they weren't playing well. I remember there was a 5-on-3, like a minute and a half 5-on-3 that they did not convert. And we were ripping into them for that. So we were keeping things very professional, and then Tyler McGregor scored the overtime winner, and we all just lost our absolute minds. I did not plan. I had a line that I regret in that call because I didn't plan ahead. I wouldn't have said the miracles line if I had known that it was going to happen. But it's just what came to me in the moment. But yeah, the call is definitely why people still talk about this.
Awesome. Aiden, do you want to get us started maybe with some intro questions to kind of set the scene?
Sure. So you guys kind of mentioned a lot about your involvement in sports broadcasting at Holy Cross. Was that ever anything that you kind of envisioned when you first applied and when you were sort of coming to campus as freshmen?
Yeah, I can take that first. I definitely wanted to get into journalism. I was always more on the writing route. So I was in the newspaper leadership and stuff like that. And I did go, I never actually did radio post Holy Cross, but I did do the writing career for a while. But it was really sports media. That's what I really wanted to get into. And as you guys know, there's not a big sports media department at Holy Cross. So you kind of have to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I used to call games at home when I was watching them. right? Like it was just that thing that I did when I was growing up. And like Craig, I was more of a writer. I think I was probably better suited to that medium. But I was really interested in it once I got to Holy Cross, and I thought it was a great opportunity, and it was something that I put a lot of time in while I was there on Mount St. James, and I don't regret a minute of it for sure.
Yeah, for me, my introduction to Holy Cross was visiting as a high school student with the speech and debate team. So we had a small sports paper, which I had written for, but my sort of craft at the time, I guess, if you want to call it that, was speaking and speech and writing and things like that. So when they had a radio station, I knew about that when I applied. It was always something that I had planned on being a little bit of an extracurricular more than anything. But when they said, you know, it's tough to get people to get to the game and wake up early and prepare to broadcast so you can get right on the air, I said, that's great. How do I do it? They said, you could do football. You just have to get there by noon. I said, waking up at noon, that's easy, even as a college freshman. And it just sort of took off from there.
Awesome. So I think part of the fun of this is not only talking about the broadcasting angle, but also just about general Holy Cross life 20 years ago from today. So could you each talk about, for the podcast, maybe some other things you were getting into at the time, maybe other clubs you were involved in, other social events, just like maybe what campus culture was like, just to set the scene a little bit.
Oh man, is the pub still open? The pub was always big once you turned 21. There was a much bigger off-campus culture at the time. I don't know if that's really the thing with like the senior apartments was or at least it was called the senior apartments then. That was like the first like luxury dorm building. So there was a big off-campus culture at Holy Cross when we were there. In terms of like extracurriculars, I played Ultimate Frisbee. I still do that. Still in touch with a lot of the Holy Cross Ultimate team from back then. I mentioned the different sports media stuff that I did. That took up, I would say the vast majority of my time there.
Yeah, I worked on the newspaper, what's now called the Spire. Just kind of worked my way up through the ranks, so I did a lot of that stuff. I also was writing for MLSsoccer.com at the time. I was a soccer journalist, so like during the MLS season, I would go back and forth to Foxborough a couple of times a week. So that was interesting trying to balance all that, but WCHC was right up there. I focused primarily on live games. And I remember spending a lot of nights and weekends at the Hart Center watching good games, bad games, everything in between. It was a great time for sure.
Yeah, for me, I was one of the guys that was on upper campus. So, you know, Milady Beach, which I have come to learn years later, was largely razed and made room for additional dorms. So, you know, certainly those sorts of amenities for a school that's as long-standing as Holy Cross is welcome. So, there's generations that get to take advantage of that where, you know, there was certainly no such thing as air conditioning or the like until you got to senior year and you got into the senior apartments. But had a flag football team, two-time back-to-back undefeated champs. That was always fun. A lot of field house open hoops nights, late night from like 10 to midnight after school work and job work and stuff like that was done. But definitely spent a lot of time with friends and getting to enjoy what it's like with a lot of freedom and independence as a, you know, 18, 19-year-old kid, or definitely great memories.
Shout out to the Boulevard Diner. Made a lot of 2 a.m.
Renda.
trips to the Boulevard Diner.
Renda from the Boulevard Diner came to our graduation and cried
Oh.
because she said that she would miss us so much. One of the nicest people you'll ever meet, and true of a lot of folks in Worcester.
She's probably still working there.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
What was the go-to order for you guys there back in the day?
Oh, bacon, egg, and cheese on toasted
Yeah.
Italian. They put
Whatever
butter on
hit
it.
tater tots.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think, obviously the campus has changed a little bit physically, but that culture I think is still the exact same. Most of that stuff you guys mentioned, writing for the paper, playing hoops in the, open gym, going to Boulevard Diner. That's all stuff that I think everyone still gets up to. It's pretty fun.
Good to know.
And then what was sort of the state of the radio station like when you guys joined, and even sort of the student newspaper?
Oh man. So the radio station, it was, it was probably similar to what it is now. When we hosted our radio shows, the phone was right there. It was just a phone that was next to the thing. There was nothing to plug into the board, so you put it on speaker and you moved the microphone down to the speaker. And if you wanted to say something to your co-host, there was no way to do that without it going over the air. So yeah, it was kind of, as Rob was saying, there weren't a lot of, the radio station, there wasn't a lot of competition to start rising up the ranks. So, I got in tight with the seniors, the upperclassmen who were running it when I was a freshman, and, stayed consistent through those 4 years. Renting stu those student activity vans to drive to all the road trips and stuff like that. And then the newspaper, which Kyle and I both did. Rob, I don't think you did the Crusader back then.
No.
But that was this a very similar thing. If that's what you wanted to do, which it in my case it was, like, it wasn't hard to break in. There were lots of opportunities to write and host your own radio show, which I also did my freshman year. I gave up on that pretty quickly. But there was a, it was easy to rise up if you really applied yourself. And yeah, it was a great experience. I ended up being the editor in chief of the Crusader. That definitely got me internships, which got me some of my first journalism jobs. And I'm really grateful for the small world that the media department was at Holy Cross.
The great thing about Holy Cross is that if you have an interest in something, you can get involved, right? There's always that balance, right, between the academics and your personal interests. But if you are willing to put in the time, you can do some really cool things. And that's the great thing about going to a school like Holy Cross with a tight-knit community, a smaller student body than a lot of other schools. You can really make an impact if you want to, and if you're willing to put the effort and the time in, and what you put into it is so critical, and it's great that that through line still exists for students even today.
Yeah, that's a great point, Kyle, because if you think about it, and I know he's not on this call because he wasn't on the broadcast, but was it Chris Delvecchio who had done a lot of work? So if you'd want to talk about the state of the radio station, and I don't want to date myself because it wasn't ancient times, but to help set up streaming so that you wouldn't have to be within the limited air, coverage radius for the radio station, but to listen over the web. That was really great, so that I had friends at home that could listen to when my broadcast was on. Tons of alums across the country, especially for this particular game, where we were able to broadcast that back over the web, and where a lot of those clips were saved and helped to, I guess, make them viral, if you want to call them that. And Chris literally had in his license plate WCHC 881. So, to Kyle's point about if you want to put the work in, this is somebody that cared enough to make it the vanity plate on his car to tell you how committed he was. That helps the rest of us, literally throw the gear in an old gym bag and carry it from place to place, make a phone call through the equipment to another kid that's behind the scenes in the studio to make it all work. Craig talks about the professional level of the broadcast that we would put on as relatively untrained guys that just figured it out as we went, and combining our own fandom and a little bit of dedication, and the amount of people that behind the scenes, you don't have, millions of dollars and hundreds of people to help you. It's somebody that wants to go walk up the hill in the cold and help it work. I think that still probably rings true and is pretty cool about the spirit of college broadcasts overall.
Yeah, and a good shout out to Chris. The only reason this call still lives on is because Chris Delvecchio recorded it and put it all together and cut that long 8-minute clip that you guys have probably heard of the whole game. But yeah, it's all due to him.
Yeah, I still talk to Chris pretty frequently. He's living actually in South Korea right now. And a lot of fond memories. And he put in so much time, and he and his college roommate Christian Santillo did a lot of the technical work behind the scenes, and Chris called him a lot of games. So it's a testament to people who put in effort like that, are able to really have an outsized impact, and it really showed in moments like this.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's still exactly the case today in terms of just putting in effort where you want to rise up. How about athletics? So fill us in on your time and your 4 years on the Hill, each of you. How were the athletic teams? Who was good? Who wasn't? Who were the big name players? What were the big storylines? Just give us a brief kind of overview of that.
So when I got to campus, Tim Zatko was the big man on campus at that point. Men's basketball really kind of dominated campus in those days. Those are the days before, I think we were the only Patriot League team that actually had scholarships. So we were pretty consistently, if not winning the league, and punching the ticket to the dance, we were always in the finals. So, men's basketball and women's basketball was, consistently, I think since then, I think they were a bit more dominant in our days. But the basketball teams were really the real stars on campus. The men's hockey team, as obviously as I was there, they improved. They made the NCAAs my sophomore year and then again my senior year, which is, what we're talking about here. I think it was probably still cons that case that was the case, for the couple years after I left, and Kyle and Rob were still there.
Yeah, men's basketball was really the dominant program. My classmates included Keith Simmons and Torrey Thomas, who were just men's basketball legends. And that team ended up going to the tournament to play Southern Illinois. I went to that game. It was another crowning achievement for that athletic class. So but that's not to say that like there weren't other pockets in the athletic program that were very successful. And I think the hockey program really caught lightning in a bottle, just the consistency of Coach Paul Pearl and really everything building up to, this moment we're talking about now.
Yeah, and for me, our times basically overlapped. So basketball was the program. I'm more of a basketball fan and not as much as, let's say, a college football fan. So understanding what goes into it freshman year, the people that lived on my floor in Milady were the freshman members of the football team. So, it was tough to say as a fan, especially ignorantly, that's not such a good team, or and they stink and things like that. When you become friends with these guys, when you live with them, they're still grinding. They still got to go to practice. They still have to do the homework. They got to go to lift. They have to check in at the dining hall because you got to make sure that you're eating enough. So, the scrutiny that the average college student is under, and then you add the demands of a program, which is still, these teams are D1 programs, and they don't have all the same bells and whistles and attention and love and fandom that, other athletes or student athletes don't have to put in that same level of, let's call it, emphasis on the academics. It does put a lot of those things into perspective too. So it's interesting now that a lot of those things are changing with NIL, but it's nice to see that the teams still have an opportunity, even 20 years later, to be able to make their way into those types of competition.
Leadership and excellence, in competition, in the classroom, in the community. For decades, Crusader Athletics has focused on our topmost commitment, elevating every student athlete, to reach for more, to grow more, to achieve more. Help us to continue to strengthen minds, build character, and celebrate together as one Crusader nation. Because when we commit together, we win together. Join us, Crusaders Together.
I guess what was the regular season like, the year the hockey team went to the NCAAs that you guys called? And what were sort of the expectations, I guess, kind of going into the postseason?
Yeah, they were definitely, if not the favorite, one of the, the top tier teams in Atlantic hockey that year. So I'm pretty sure they finished around first place. I think they were in first. Obviously you have to do the conference tournament to punch the ticket. I think it was Canisius that they beat in the conference final that year. But they had also made the tournament 2 years earlier, and they played North Dakota, the team that Jonathan Toews was on, Hall of Famer Jonathan Toews, and didn't win, obviously, but they held their own. They was like, it was, I think it was like a 2-goal game going into the third period. They ended up losing by 3, I think. But the hockey team had definitely started to show consistency. And, by the time that the 2016 came around, it really felt like their time. Paul Perl, that Kyle mentioned earlier, had really put in the work and really built up that program. We had a really, really good goalkeeper in Tony Casada. So, when you have the great goalie, you're in every game. And then there was a solid team behind him that you had, like, forwards like Tyler McGregor and Pierre Naperfenet and Bubba Sixsmith, who was a couple years younger. All those guys also went on to play like some minor league hockey afterwards as well. So th it was it, it felt like, it certainly didn't feel like a team that was gonna go challenge, Phil Kessel and Minnesota, but I was confident that they were going to, I was very confident that they were at least going to, make the tournament that year. And then anything can happen, as we know.
The only thing I would add is that it's Atlantic hockey in 2006, right? Like it doesn't get any smaller than that from a college hockey perspective, right? This was kind of a ragtag group of hockey programs. This was before Quinnipiac was Quinnipiac. Like, you just didn't know what was going to happen from weekend to weekend because of all the factors that Craig and Rob had talked about earlier. You just don't know. But the one thing about that Holy Cross hockey team was that they had all the pieces and they had the right style of play to get through in the postseason, and it all just sort of came together and congealed wonderfully.
Yeah, I mean, great point. I won't harp on it, but if you talk about where the players are playing each other and the venues that they're up against and the competition they're up against, not exactly the firing squad. And then you hear that you're going to go out to North Dakota and you're going to play in an arena, and there's going to be something like 10 or 12,000 people, however many people it is. And by the way, downstairs, and we got the opportunity to go and walk and check it out, there's an Olympic size rink that the team actually played on. So they're playing on a larger rink just to be better conditioned. And by the way, Minnesota's top two lines are already drafted. So, it's interesting. You talk about what the regular season is like. It's never framed against those things. But, Coach Pearl certainly had the team looking like they could beat anybody on any given night. And I definitely remember Tony Cazzata's name as like the goaltender. So in hockey, if you've got the goaltender, anything is possible for a run. And that certainly helped to set the stage for their strong regular season.
That's a great segue then, Rob. Why don't we talk about that Minnesota team? I dug up an article using the Wayback Machine, no longer on the internet, from an SB Nation writer. This sports writer, Chris Dilks, he quoted that Minnesota team as the quote, "the greatest bad guys in college hockey history." Would you just kind of talk about your impressions of that Minnesota team, during that season and heading into that matchup? I mean, they're sort of, I guess, infamous now for a whole number of reasons, but just maybe go through and profile them.
Yeah, that team really revolved around Kessel. He was the guy that he knew he was the best player on the ice, and he acted like the best player on the ice. And I don't know if I don't know, honestly know enough about the rest of the roster to know like who was the agitator and who did the fans really hate, who did the North Dakota fans really hate apart from Kessel. But Kessel would score a goal and then go around with his ear, with his hand, or cup to his ear, whether he was at home or on the road, because he loved the booze on the road. So yeah, they were famous around the college hockey community in the country, just for being the guys who were gonna punch you in the mouth and laugh at you afterwards. To knock those guys off their perch was a little extra sweetness in there.
The interesting thing about it is that Minnesota was exactly the type of team you wouldn't expect to be vulnerable to what happened that night, right? Like, they were a bunch of guys who went out and grinded. Like, they all had talent, but they were grinders. Like, they were physical. Like, they had the type of mentality where you wouldn't think that they'd get upset in the first round of the NCAA tournament by a huge underdog. But one night, right? Like, so you just never know.
And you can't overstate it because you get it when you're flying into North Dakota, certainly my first visit, and it's just patch of land after patch of land after patch of land. And to them, and this is how they frame it to me as a New Yorker, and it's like this rivalry between North Dakota and Minnesota puts Yankees Red Sox to shame. And I'm sitting there giggling like, you can't be serious, right? And then you get to the game and the crowd is insane. And if there's anything, that could rattle them or at least help bolster a team like Holy Cross coming from Hockey East or, coming from the East Coast, not a traditional perennial powerhouse in college hockey, I think that that's something that certainly helped to, if not level the playing field, certainly tilt it towards the Crusaders.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point about that. I think that what you mentioned about lifting Holy Cross more than intimidating Minnesota is the case. Like, I remember in the pregame press conference the day before, I forget if it was Nepair Fernet or McGregor, but one of them was asked, how's this going to compare? What's this going to be like? And he was like, well, instead of, a concrete wall on one side, there's going to be 5,000 people. So, that's different. So it was definitely an environment that, I don't think any of those guys had ever played in, and probably haven't played in since, even when the ones who went on to play, in the minors, I doubt they ever experienced an atmosphere quite like the Ralph was that night.
They sold out the bookstore of all of the Holy Cross hockey gear and probably a whole bunch of other hats and t-shirts too. And they were wearing purple that night. So, it was juxtaposed against it turning completely maroon and gold just a few hours later. But that night, if there was anybody in the house that was a Minnesota fan, they were quiet and they were not visible, and probably because they were way outgunned.
Just to add in a little context to jog the memory. So the other two big names on that Minnesota team were Blake Wheeler and Alex Goligoski,
Right.
both of which went on to play, pretty solid NHL careers. And then a couple other random facts. So the attendance that night, it was a sold out crowd of 11,153, packed house. And then just for the context of the U and Dakota and the Minnesota beef. So Minnesota had won, I think, two national championships where they had beaten Minnesota, or excuse me, they had beaten North Dakota on their way in the years prior. Like, they had, been really strong in 2002, 2003. So there had been a lot of animosity within the WCHA at that point.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And I'll tell you, like, after that game, walking through the arena, we were heroes because we were associated with Holy Cross. They didn't get to talk to the players. The players weren't walking around the arena, but we're walking through with our badges and, we're dressed in suits and stuff like that. So we're standing out from the crowd. And anyone, if you told them that you were the Holy Cross announcer, they wanted to buy you a drink.
Leadership and excellence in competition, in the classroom, in the community. For decades, Crusader Athletics has focused on our topmost commitment, elevating every student athlete to reach for more, to grow more, to achieve more. Help us to continue to strengthen minds, build character, and celebrate together as one Crusader Nation. Because when we commit together, we win together. Join us, Crusaders Together.
I was kind of curious when you guys found out that you were going to make it to the NCAA tournament. How did all of the logistics work out on the WCHC sports and sort of the transportation and everything to get there and set everything up?
Yeah, so for this one, I mean, typically I mentioned, we would usually like rent a student activities van and, drive down to DC or something for a basketball game. I think that was as far as we would usually go. So for this one, we got to hop a flight on the team charter. We hitched a ride with that with the team. So we got a charter that went straight from the Worcester Airport to Grand Forks. And then I think
And
I assume it was just cabs from there.
do I have the memory right that they played the game on the TV on the way back, on the flight back? I feel like we watched it on TV on the way back, which was
That
pretty
definitely
cool.
rings a bell. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like even for the team, you're going home, and anybody that's in the tournament, any athlete is gonna, despite the odds, they're gonna go there thinking that they can go home with a trophy. So even though there's disappointment that you lose to the hosts. When you go home and you get to watch that, and that was something that's televised, and obviously it has its moment for the accomplishment. It's pretty cool to have had an opportunity to, sit among the guys and watch that too.
I was also not prepared to extend our stay. I was
Yeah.
like, all right, we're gonna go, we're gonna lose in the first round, and then we'll fly back home. We'll be back by, 3 days later. And I was like, oh, we have to stay for a few more days. Okay. I think I had to push a paper deadline back or something like that.
Yeah, I definitely missed the psych exam or two.
So that's actually a great segue. So where was your head at, I guess all of you, the morning of the game? Like you guys wake up game day. You're in Grand Forks. Like, where is your head at? What are you thinking? What are your expectations? I mean, do you have any idea this was even possible?
Well, like I said, so I did the I had done the previous NCAA appearance, which was in Denver 2 years earlier. And based on that, when they held their own against North Dakota, I figured like this is a better team. Casado was the goalie for both teams. It's like Casado's better than he was as a sophomore. So I was expecting it to be at least a contested game. I was not expecting to get blown out. I didn't think we'd win, obviously, but I figured it would, we would be able to at least keep it respectable over the, over 3 periods. But yeah, like I said, I did not script a call or anything like that. So I was not prepared to actually win the game.
I think it's fair to say Craig was the most optimistic of the three of us on game day. I didn't think we were gonna win. I wasn't prepared for it to be very close, and the fact that it unfolded the way it did was amazing to me in the moment and just fantastic looking back on it now.
Yeah, I wonder, Kyle, if that sort of thinking, realism or whatever, leading up to the game, the day of, again, having the opportunity to walk around the rink. I mean, listen, it's a cool perk. If you're a sports fan, you put on a credential and you get to walk around and you get to see places that, sometimes as a fan you can't get to. You definitely can't get down on the ice or go in the practice facility in the locker room. Being able to walk around and see these facilities, like, holy smokes, like NHL teams may not have this available to them, and just get to revel in that uniqueness. Getting to fly out on a chartered flight with the team, that's when you really feel, you're not lacing up the skates and throwing on the sweater, but you feel like you're part of it. And then also too, like we had gotten some letters from alums, even some folks, family members that had shot notes to say, like, you're our way to listen to our kid play. I can't get from Canada or wherever else I'm from to the Heart Center, so we listen through you guys. So for me, just knowing that's the case, the team isn't going to go out there and embarrass themselves. They made it there. You're not exactly comparing apples to apples, but I just didn't want to screw up. I know somebody's mom is maybe watching this on TV, hopefully listening to us or, family and friends back home. So I just wanted to make sure, from my seat, I could do a good enough job and not seem like the moment was too big, just like on the ice. They didn't want to get big timed I wouldn't want that to happen for the people listening either.
Yeah, and to your point there, like, the prep work that, goes into every game where, this isn't our full-time job. We don't know all the different players that our teams are going to play up against. We all know, our own rosters, but every time you go before a game, you got to learn the other roster. And especially doing play by play, you got to be able to make sure you can, attach the name to the number, because most of them don't have names on their jersey. So, that's a lot that goes into it. So there's a lot of just studying the roster, less about, from a play-by-play standpoint, less about who, like, how they play and the different patterns that you need to look for. It's really just getting the names and numbers right.
So the game starts, right? You guys are having a good call. It's a back and forth affair. Both teams are kind of neck and neck. It starts getting a little later on in the game. Holy Cross is still hanging in there. When you guys saw that it had a chance to get really close down to the wire and then heading into overtime, kind of walk us through where your heads were at.
So for me, if I remember correctly, we were down. We scored the tying goal in third period, maybe like, halfway through, maybe a little past the halfway mark of the third period, maybe like 8 minutes left or something like that, which made it 3-3. And then at that was, I mean, leading up to, that whole, as you said, the whole game, it was tight. I don't think anyone ever had a 2-goal lead. It was always a 1-goal game. Went back and forth a little bit. Once we got the tying goal, it was, they can hold on. They can just hold on for the next 8 minutes and get the game to overtime. And then, it's golden goal and anything can happen. And that's when, as the clip that Chris Del Vecchio put together, like, after the tying goal, it was just a whole lot of me saying, save by Quesada, save by Quesada. Saved by Quesada into the corner. His rebound control was so good. But yeah, at that point, we're just like, let's get it to overtime. And it wasn't until we got it to overtime that I was like, okay, we can actually win this. I was not expecting them to get the fourth goal before the end of the third period, because I don't think they were even playing for it. I think they knew that Minnesota was going to start coming at them with everything they had. So they just kind of played, hunker down hockey for the remaining minutes.
It was just so tight and tense, and you could feel it in the arena, right? Because once the game went tied and you could look at the clock and it was just like, something could happen. We don't know if it's gonna happen, but everyone was nervous enough in the arena to maybe contemplate that something could happen. And it was just a crescendo until you get into overtime, and then we all
And it was the
know.
first minute of overtime. Like, it was quick. First minute or two, and maybe it was just past the first minute, but it was quick
Yeah,
in overtime.
that's you want to talk about when they tied the game, and it felt like the puck, like the ice was tilted. You couldn't get it out. It's just save after save, like you just said. And at that point, it's like an exhale, right? You would think it's like the excitement builds up. Okay, now we're in overtime, and now we go out and win it. I mean, they may have said that in the locker room. They may have thought it. They went out and did it. But at least for me, sitting up in the stands and broadcasting the game, it's like, oh my God, I can't believe we escaped it. So it was a little bit like that brief relief or excitement of being able to tie the game. And I think we said we're not going home yet. Certainly to make sure that you could even escape regulation at that point and be like, it's just incredible that you're at this point. I just kept going back to say, like, these guys are NHL players. And we're right there with them through a full regulation hockey game, on the road for us too. And as much as a home atmosphere as we had, it's definitely not back in Worcester. It's under a completely different sort of environment. And you're right there in it. And then, to end it in OT so quickly, that probably led to the excitement and the breakdown from us just as much as anything else. Because it's like you're still so jazzed up, that puck drops and you're a couple of shifts in maybe and game over. That was where it just was such a rapid rise and exhale and relief to, all right, let's see what we could do to holy crap, it just happened. I think that that's what led to a lot of the excitement.
Ehrman carrying down, gets around one man, but then he's taken out by Matt Burke. Petulny able to regroup, then it's poked away by Burke, who takes over. Pushes it up ahead to McGregor. Holy Cross coming down with a 3-on-2. McGregor from the right side, centering feet. And Holy Cross! Oh my God! Yes! Oh, score! Tyler McGregor! Yes! Yes! Tyler McGregor, off of the rebound, puts it past Kelly Briggs, and Holy Cross has knocked off the Minnesota Golden Gophers!
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Yes!
Oh my goodness.
We're not going home yet, baby!
Just 53 seconds into overtime, and the Holy Cross Crusaders are mobbing Tyler McGregor and Tony Quesada! It's the second chance! It's the second effort, and it goes in!
Do you believe in miracles?
Yes!
Yes, I do! Holy Cross has shocked the world right now.
Before we wrap up, can you just talk about like the call itself? Like what was going through you? Like I know Craig, you said you mentioned you hadn't actually prepared anything. Like who's calling which part? Who has the infamous? I mean, obviously you guys are all screaming, but who had the? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Who had the? We're not going home yet. Could you just talk through all that?
Yeah, so I was play by play, so I had the main one when you know the puck went in, we all just started screaming. I think I was able to maintain some actual words. I don't know if Kyle and Rob were able to articulate words for the first few seconds. Rob was definitely the one saying, "Are you kidding me?" I unfortunately said, "Do you believe in miracles?" I regret that. But I mean, listen, yeah, the call, as we said, like it's why it kind of lives on, why we're talking about it now. Because we, it was when we were allowed to be students again. You know, we were professional up until that point. And now the game's over and we just absolutely lost our minds. And it's funny, I did an interview with a Minnesota radio station 5 years ago for the 15 year anniversary. They like contacted me on Twitter, and the drive time host that's interviewing me is like, "I don't know if you realize this, how often you're back in Minneapolis, but your voice has been heard on this station probably thousands of times because they've turned that call into like a bumper coming back from a commercial break or going to a commercial." Like, so that just gets played over and over. All three of us, like the you know, a 30 seconds of that clip, we are broadcast around the Minnesota area thousands of times over the years. It's crazy to think about. It's really crazy to think about.
I can't remember anything about that moment. What I will say is it may not have been professional, but it was definitely proportional to the moment, right? Because it was so significant and so unexpected. I mean, we were 20, 21, 22 years old and calling a game at North Dakota. Like, of course we're going to lose our minds. And you
calling the biggest upset in college hockey history.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to understand the environment too, right? Because, you know, monitor situation and, you know, being able to know exactly what happened. There's no spotter. The puck is coming in from the side and all of a sudden it's just pandemonium and screaming and yelling. The team is going crazy. I'm actually looking at the bench just to make sure. I was like, that went in, right? Because when they pour over the boards and Paul Perl's kind of walking around with his like score book, his, you know, his line sheet in his hand, just to have an understanding of what happened and how it happened, because you want to try to say like, what went in? I'm like, it's the second chance it went in. Cause you know, coming off the sideboard towards the front of the net, you know, and pucks getting bounced around and all that sort of stuff. So
what it was a centering pass McGregor made the centering pass and it bounced off the defenseman's skate and came right back to him. And the goalkeeper had reacted to the pass. So McGregor had the shooting lane wide open. And you're
Right.
right, Rob. Like, we weren't able to tell in the moment. So I'm like looking at the, you know, at the, at, we're on kind of like the secondary radio row, but someone else had a monitor with the actual TV broadcast. So I'm like trying to look at that and figure out what the hell just happened, so I
Yeah,
can
that
explain
makes
to the
sense.
audience.
That makes sense why I said it's the second chance and it went in, because even
Yeah.
years later, I'm like, what was the second chance about it? I mean, they got into OT. So, okay, so now we tie this out. So, to Kyle's point, in the moment where you're just freaking out, and look, like, there's no romanticism about what we're doing here, because again, those are the guys on the ice. But, you know, sitting up at the Hart Center in a night that you don't want to be up there and you got stuff to do and it's freezing cold and you stop by Cool Beans for, you know, a hazelnut coffee so you could get warmed up enough to do the game, and you don't know who's listening and you don't know who's paying attention to it, much like the team, right? You know, they're playing the game because they love it and they put in the hard work. So you kind of feel that reward too. It's like, holy smokes, you got to take advantage of the opportunity, and the team gives you a great moment that you get to live on site, in person, live. It's pretty cool.
First and ever autograph. First and only autograph I ever got to sign was after that game. As I mentioned, walking through the arena, someone stopped and asked if I was with the team. I was like, "Yeah, we just called the game." He's like, "Oh my God, can you sign my program?"
Wow.
Sure.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
And what's it been like, I guess, all these years later, too, continuing to see sort of the reactions to it? And even for you, Craig, I mean, being interviewed like 15 years after as well about that moment.
That's the thing. Like, you never think something like that is gonna like live on. Like, you experience it in the moment. And listen, like, the, you know, because of the ridiculousness of the call, like, we did kind of go semi-viral in that day. Like, things couldn't go viral. The internet wasn't what it was now. But like, our clip was played on Olbermann and Patrick's radio show. They kind of tore it apart. But you know, it was the, I was getting links for weeks of people like, yeah, just like listen to this, like another radio show in, you know, Minnesota, or not, like, you know, in Missouri or something, like heard your clip and played it on their Homer call of the week or whatever it was. So it was like, it was a thing at the time, but the fact that it's still a thing 15, 20 years later, or 20 years later now, it's kind of absurd when you think about it.
It's one of my great college memories,
Oh,
right?
for sure.
Like, you just can't predict that you're ever going to be in a situation like that. It's just so rare to have that opportunity. And it was so special because we were a few of the students who even saw it happen live, right? Like, you had the players on the team, you had student managers, and you had us. Like, it's not like there were a bunch of people from Worcester in North Dakota at
I
the
think there was a watch party back at the Hart Center, or not, or maybe at the Hogan Center. I think they hosted a watch party for that game. So there may have been a few more, but that didn't happen, you know, in any other circumstance.
Yeah, it's interesting too, right? Because you don't have an opportunity, you know, unless you are an athlete some of these times, to do something that's like, oh, what are you going to be remembered for? You have that moment or that chance. And, you know, like I said, when you have buddies that are calling up the radio station and asking you questions about, oh, like, what do you think about this water polo team? Like, yeah, your friends will listen. Like, my dad would listen to my show and call in every week. You're like, you know, is anybody out there? And you're doing it because you like to do it, and there's probably few chances that you're going to get in life to host your own radio, you know, show, or to broadcast a game at any level. And the fact that people were listening and paying attention, and like I said, the memory that sticks with me is all the different emails that got sent back to the station to say, like, you know, I don't get to listen to my kid, or I don't get to watch my kid. But when you guys go and do those broadcasts, it's our chance to do it. So it's cool, right? You're doing it selfishly because you think it's fun, but then you hear that other people get to enjoy and share in that too. That's definitely one of the things that's stuck with me for 20 years.
And what have you guys gotten up to in those 20 years since? What do you each do?
So I did the sports journalism thing for a while. It's turns out it's really hard to make any real money as a blogger. Yeah, I'm out of that now. Now I work in tech. I'm a product marketer for a tech company. But I will say I just started a new job like a month ago, and we're introducing yourself to new coworkers, and they always ask, "What's a fun fact about you?" Here's the YouTube link of my college hockey call. I keep it alive.
Yeah, so I worked in sports journalism for a while. I covered soccer, and I eventually transitioned. I work as an in-house attorney now.
Yeah, as for me, I was hopeful I can get into broadcasting and things like that. Graduating in 2008 and into 2009 at the height of the financial crisis was a pretty awful time to be looking for work. But I got into a financial data market data company, and I've been with them for almost 17 and a half years now in lots of different jobs. I actually submitted some articles to Craig and some of his early ventures, trying to keep the online writing going. And interestingly enough, I got to throw props to an 08 classmate, Yvonne Watanabe, a hardcore Celtics fan and Miami Dolphins fan, if you could believe it, and a Red Sox fan too, who always said that he could listen to my show. And even though I was from New York and a Yankee homer, I could cut it pretty fair down the middle. So he encouraged me during COVID to start a Yankees podcast. I might have recorded, I don't know, 15 episodes in the back of my pickup truck. So, the itch never really goes away, and it's always fun to think back on it too.
So we really appreciate all of you joining us today. And thank you to the audience as well for listening to this special edition of the Seder Stories podcast. Be sure to subscribe on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, and help us spread the word by leaving a 5-star review. We appreciate all the support. And as always, go Cross, go.